You know, when we have a national rep each year come to our convention, part of what that national rep does is to share a message and give a report about what's been happening over the past year in our national organization. So sometimes people want to say that I've heard people talk about how the national organization is them. It's far away. It's what does the NFB want, and kind of separate the NFB from the national organization, our small affiliate. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows that I truly know that the national organization is, we are a part of it. We are all, it's like we're families in a big family unit. Then we have the family in Maryland, which is our head family, and we are all parts of it. You could even think of it as branches of a tree or whatever you like to think of it as, pieces that all fit together to make a whole. And that's how it is in the NFB. And I truly respect Mark Riccobono and his leadership. I am grateful for Anil. Those of you who were here yesterday know that I've known him for a little while now. He has truly been a mentor to me, and I respect him. And so listen and learn. If you haven't heard about the initiatives of this great organization, you will now. I hope you're as amazed as I was the first time I listened to a presidential report at a convention. And thank you, Anil, for coming. And let's hear what he has to say.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you for the kind words. You never know who you're going to impact on this life journey. So I think it's always important to always try to be an exemplar. and you've seen me at my best and my worst. So I'm glad to know that the good outweighs the bad. So it's my pleasure to be here with my NFB of Alaska family. Such an appropriate analogy. I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia, and a lot of my family there is in that metro area. But when I relocated to come to work at the National Center, I already had a built-in family with my Federation family. And I like that, you know, regardless of where I travel throughout this country, I have a family. And unfortunately, this year, I'm not able to actually physically break bread with the family in Alaska. I'm blessed to have been there once before, and I'm blessed to be with you now virtually this year. President Riccobono, of course, we have so many conventions going on this weekend, and he had to make a choice as to which one he would be serving. So his loss is my gain. I get to hang out with Alaska, and I'm looking forward to it. The role I play at this particular part of the convention activity is to share the national report. And I want to highlight something that Bonnie just said. What I'm talking about here is not work that that other place in Baltimore has done. I think that each and every member of the Federation should not necessarily just be amazed, as Bonnie said, but be thankful and grateful that you, by being a member of this organization, have helped facilitate all of this work that we're able to do to allow blind people to live the lives they want. I don't know about you, but I am definitely filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind, because, you know, every day my expectations are raised. You know, my contributions make a difference to myself and to others, and I can celebrate the accomplishments, all of my accomplishments, with my Federation family. And I'm hoping that, listening to my words this morning, you will celebrate with me in all of our accomplishments that we've done over the past year and the things that we have planned for this upcoming year. President Riccobono, I agree with Bonnie. He's an extremely good leader. He is the leader of our organization in this time, which is very trying. And not only the COVID, but also the social unrest. And we as an organization have to continue to be dynamic and agile so that we as blind people, which are truly just a subset of society, can also deal successfully and productively with those challenges that faces the overall society. And I'm just blessed to have known him for so many years. President Riccobono and I met each other in 1999. We attended a leadership seminar while Dr. Meyer was still president of the organization, and we've been fast friends ever since. He's like a brother to me, and I am blessed to be the godfather of his three kids, his wife, Melissa, very dear friend. And I'm just thankful that in these particular instances, we have these relationships that will continue to support and nurture us as we continue to strive to live the life we want. I love what President Riccobono has kind of labeled the theme of this year's national convention. It's kind of carried over into other work that he's done, and that's protecting and connecting, you know, protecting and connecting us all during this COVID crisis, during this social unrest, et cetera. It's important for all of us to still feel protected in this world that's ever changing. And also we do that by staying connected in the way that the Federation has done since 1940. So I want to share a little bit about the work that we've been doing. But before I do, I want to make everybody recognize that November 3rd is a very important day. So between now and then, if you have not already done so, please go vote. We as an organization continue to fight for the right of blind people to be fully participating members of society. And one of the most awesome responsibilities of that full participation is to cast a vote. And I'm not going to tell you how, because I think that an individual choice is necessary in this particular instance, because we do want our government to reflect the people that are governed. And the only way that happens is if every person votes. So one way you can find out all about the candidates that you're going to be voting on is you can use our NFB Newsline, which is a service that allows blind people to access, well over 500 magazines, publications, newspapers, et cetera. But even more dynamically, it has up-to-date information around the candidates and all of the national and some of the local elections. So I encourage you to go and read up so that you can cast an informed vote for whatever candidate and for whatever ballot referendum item that may be up in your district. You heard a lot about Newsline if you tuned in yesterday. I believe that some of the recordings are going to be provided, but Scott White did an excellent job of going over the various utilities of the Newsline. We're coming near the end of what we consider Meet the Blind Month, which is October. I hope that you guys have done some Meet the Blind Month activities, if not formal ones, at least some informal ones. Hopefully you've taken the time to get out there in the community virtually in a more dynamic way than you have throughout the rest of the year, because the best way to prevent and overcome the discrimination and the false misconceptions, the misconceptions about blindness that society possesses, is for more and more people to actually interact and get to know that we are some pretty darn good people to get to know. So if you're working in Meet the Blind Month, it's not too late to maybe contact our Independence Market if you want to get some alphabet cards or whatever. But just work to make sure that we continue to fulfill our mission by making sure we're in our communities and people can see us every day. The theme for this month, Meet the Blind Month, is lived experiences with problem solving, self-advocacy, and intersectionality. And I think that really does kind of sum up where we are. We have a lived life of problem solving. We work together to develop self-confidence and promote self-advocacy. And we recognize that there's so many intersections between all the other characteristics that we share, including our blindness. And if you're out there on social media and you have things to say, please use the hashtag #MeetTheBlind to enter into that social media conversation on Twitter. You can also get more information about the organization, Meet the Blind Month, et cetera, if you just visit the NFB.org page. And if you are doing things around Meet the Blind Month, please send an email to web@nfb.org so that we can make sure we develop a chronicle of those things and maybe socialize it to other individuals. As we move forward, we're trying to make sure that we continue to communicate to our members in a real way. President Cubono has stepped up our presidential release. It used to be a recording that we record and then disseminate via the web and through thumb drives to our chapter presidents to play that message at our chapter meetings. Now he's starting to do that live. What a wonder that we've accomplished in using the virtual technology that's out there. And I'll take a note here to state that although we have been challenged with respect to not being able to be in each other's space, the way that we have capitalized on the utility of this Zoom platform to make sure that the work of the Federation continues to be done and our relationships continue to exist have been phenomenal. And I think that we're learning things now that when we come out of this COVID crisis, will make us stronger, because we'll still be able to implement these tools to provide interaction with our members that we had not before. So I encourage you at the first of every month to tune in virtually to the Presidential Release Live. It also offers a dynamic Q&A component, which didn't exist with the static production of the Presidential Release. So it gives every member an opportunity to ask a question from our national president directly. So I've been told for some housekeeping things, just to let you know that our partners at the American Action Fund continue to support us through Braille calendars. And if you want to order some 2021 Braille calendars, you can do so by emailing actionfund@actionfund.org. We're doing the preparation for our Braille Readers Are Leaders program that encourages not only young people, but also adults to read Braille. As a person who lost his sight at age 25, I recognize that adults can learn Braille, and it's an important tool for you to acquire. The application should be up soon. The program starts December 1st and will go through January 18th. It just requires people to read Braille, keep a log of the Braille they read, and there is a contest component. So I encourage you to visit the webpage, the homepage, to get more information about that if you're interested. So I don't know how many of you actually participated in our virtual convention. It wasn't going to be in Houston, but it was anywhere, everywhere. Hopefully, we'll be able to get through the virus and actually come back together once again. I do think that there'll still be some virtual component. But if situations allow, we'll be gathering in LA, that's Louisiana, not Los Angeles, in Louisiana, in New Orleans, in 2021. And I really hope that we can, because I miss embracing my Federation family and looking forward to coming together as we do for our national convention, which is the supreme authority of the National Federation of the Blind. And if you have not attended a convention before, I just encourage you to do so. It is a life-changing event. Everyone that I've spoken with that attended a convention, they echo the same sentiment. And if you're worried about the finances that it requires to participate, we do offer a first-time convention scholarship, our Jernigan Convention Scholarship. If you're interested, just contact Bonnie, and she can provide some information, and basically you'd have to just write us an essay. Nothing huge, but just let us know why you'd like to attend. And we try to get as many people to experience that. And we recognize that once we get them that one time to experience it, then they work very diligently to make sure they do it again. My friend Robert Smith from Atlanta said the name of his leadership seminar was the Free Bite Seminarians. And he says that everybody deserves at least one free bite. And if we can get you one free bite of that apple at the convention, we know that you'll get a hunger for it and come show up year after year. Some of the other things that happen at convention will go into play starting November 1st. We offer 30 scholarships to blind students across the country. That application will go live on November 1st. We offer Dr. Jacob Balotin Awards to individuals who are doing things that can really move the needle around blindness and full participation. So it's not restricted in any way. If you think there's a person or entity that's doing something that makes our lives that much better, that is an exemplar of best practices for businesses, et cetera, make a nomination. And that application goes live. We give them not only our recognition, but also financial support to continue their work. So now we've been focusing a lot around membership, which I love. The only way that we can continue to have the power and the success that we have as an organization is to have to continue to build our dynamic membership of blind people and sighted people as members of our organization. So what we're doing is making sure that we exercise our commitment to diversity, which is listed in our code of conduct. We recognize that in order for us to really be strong, we have to tap into the talent of every blind person that's out there, every person who is a friend of the blind, regardless of race, gender, color, sexual orientation, et cetera, et cetera. And we have done a conscious job of trying to make sure that we do that work in a way that has that degree of integrity. I applaud Rosie Carranza and Sean Calloway, who are the leaders of our diversity committee, which are helping us as members to understand that we have more in common than we have differences. And hopefully we can learn to leverage all of our talent and all of our resources to make sure that we continue to work to live the lives we want. In order to help build membership, we've been hosting quarterly membership conferences because some people, they just don't know how to do membership building. And it really is more simple than most people think. So we host these quarterly conferences to get people in an environment where we can share in a safe space the strategies that have proven effective with respect to membership building. The membership committee also has monthly phone calls. So if you are the membership chair or on the membership committee of the affiliate, I encourage you, if you're not already, to participate in these phone calls, because we really do need to be intentional about that. We can't let the good news of the Federation just happen by chance. We have to have a strategy around it. And realistically, that's why we've been so strong. We have had a strategy. We have to continue to teach people how to reach people. There's a prospective new member tools. We have a membership card that has the pledge card, pledge on one side, and a 1-minute message on the other, and some other tools that you can access in order to encourage and incentivize people to join. And we're encouraging all the chapters to make sure that they update their chapter membership list, because the more accurate data we have, the more we're able to communicate to our members, and the more we're able to build on that collective action that we tout so much. Any information you have or any information you need, you can reach out to membership@nfb.org. Ask any questions and request any information that you need in order to build the membership of the National Federation of the Blind. There are also tools like public service announcements that are available. Some of them have already been played on the radio. If you want to try to reach out to some of your local radio stations, just pull the PSAs down from nfb.org/PSAs, P-S-A-S, because we do have several of them. So one thing I'd like to do is address the elephant in the room. We know that the national organization and our organization overall has a perception. Many people who don't know us see us as the hell raisers, the people who litigate, et cetera. And that's a well-earned reputation, but it doesn't define us. It is a strength that we have, but it's one of the many tools in our toolbox. So I'll address straight off. Do we litigate? Absolutely. We believe that the legal process was put in place for every citizen, and we are citizens of this country. So we use that legal process when it's necessary. I will lead into other things where we show partnership better, but I think it's important to recognize that we are litigious, But we do it in a strategic way. If you go to nfb.org/legal, you can get a list of all of our legal cases and legal efforts. And what you will find is we are strategic about how we enter into the litigation. There are far too many issues out there that require litigation to resolve. We would not be able to afford the legal fees in order to do so. But the goal of our litigation is to create systemic change, which prevents other things that are very similar from happening to others, regardless of whether we're able to enter into their case as providing legal support at all. One of the prime examples is the work that we've been doing around blind parenting. We have chosen selectively various parents. It's not like one parent situation who has their child taken away from them is more important than the other. But there are instances where one parent's situation will create case law and create systemic change where more families will be positively impacted from the work that we do. And we have to be that strategic if we're going to be using the limited resources that we have respectfully. So let me mention some of the successes that we've had. In this current time, we've had some tremendous success in voting access, but there's still so many fights to fight. But we want to make sure, again, that we are able to exercise that fundamental right of every citizen, and that's to cast a private, independent ballot. And the days are gone from the time where you have to get someone else to help you. There was always that uncertainty about, is that person casting the vote that I say, or are they taking the opportunity to double down on their vote? So that's the way we're dealing with it. We're making sure that the technology that's out there, we're able to exploit it and use it in a way that allows us to have the same degree of independence and confidence that our vote's being cast as any other citizen. So we've been working on employment discrimination. We just recently had a success in resolving the employment situation with Amazon. There are other employment avenues that we're also championing, so I encourage you to visit the website if you're interested in getting more information about that. We've worked so that the IRS will now provide blind taxpayers with information that we require in an alternative format that meets our needs. It's important for us to be able to manage our finances independently as anyone else. There's the work we've done with the Social Security Administration around the kiosk. So we've had that degree of success. And let me tell you how you can help us and other stuff that we're doing now. So with Amazon, there's a fulfillment center, working in the Amazon Fulfillment Center. We're looking for individuals who've made applications for those and have experienced some degree of discrimination in that pursuit. Individuals who are interested in developing websites that are interested in using the GoDaddy platform to make it accessible. We want to make sure that the tools are accessible to blind individuals so that we can use the tool to create an accessible web presence or e-commerce presence just like anybody else. If you've been using some of the job search tools out there, Indeed, I forget all of them, but if you have been trying to use those to find out what the job market is like, apply for jobs yourself, and you found some degrees of inaccessibility, please reach out and let us know. Telehealth is very important. We've got individuals who are wanting to use the mobile devices to make sure they can monitor their health, interact with their insurance companies and their medical practitioners. So if you're trying to do that and having some problems, please let us know. And of course, there's always a lot of surveys that we have that we need you to participate in so that we capture the data to know exactly what our strategy should be. We have surveys around the guide dogs for Uber and Lyft, getting information from educational technology that's being used by people in various educational situations. We're looking for individuals who have faced some accessibility barriers in traveling. We're collaborating with a lot of those individuals. And if you want to provide that information, please just contact Valerie Yingling at our national office. Her email address is vyingling, Y-I-N-G-L-I-N-G at nfb.org. Now, as Bonnie said, I'm the executive director of Blindness Initiatives, and I'll talk about our programs in just a minute. John Bergen is the executive director of operations for our national center, so he's everything running with respect to our whole city block there, but also he coordinates all of our national convention activities. And he and his team, with support of all of our members, executed an excellent convention this year. The other executive director is John Perret, who's our executive director of advocacy and policy. So let me talk about that fundamental strength that the National Federation of the Blind has been known for, and really kind of the catalyst of why we evolved. So our advocacy and policy efforts are unmatched. We have so many entities out there that marvel at the work that we're able to do. And I'm quick to tell everybody that we do have a very dynamic team that works in our advocacy and policy department. But the real strength of our advocacy and policy efforts are our members. And I'm always happy to say that with our 50,000 member organization across the country, primarily of volunteers who through their commitment to making their lives better and the lives of others better, dedicate their time and energy to get the work done. We would not be able to afford the work that we do. So we're blessed to have individuals that are motivated to be a part of what we're doing. And I tell people that if Congress on Monday introduces a bill that we don't like, by Tuesday at that same time, 90% of the members of Congress, both on the House and the Senate side, would have gotten either a phone call or an email, in some instances a fax, and really in some instances a knock on their door from a member of the Federation or a family member or a friend of the Federation that lets them know how we feel about what they're doing. If you want to get specific information about it, I encourage you to visit nfb.org/advocacy, and you can get information like the following. You can get information on our parental rights legislation. I've neglected to look at the list. Many of the states in our state affiliates, our organization, have passed local blind parental rights legislation, and that's the way that we do. That's how we were able to get a national white cane law passed. So many of our affiliates passed local legislation that it was necessary to make sure there's some continuity in the understanding of what these laws provided, that we were able to successfully pass a national white cane law. So I encourage you to continue to work on behalf of the blind parents out there to make sure that they're not discriminated against by some well-intended, I'll say, but misguided social worker that comes into their birthing room and takes their baby away from them, or some social worker that comes to their home and takes their baby away from them. It still happens, and we have to stay vigilant and make sure that this is stopped. You can find information about the self-advocacy and higher education or links on that webpage. You can have information about our legislative issues. Now, I don't know if any of you participated in our Washington seminar this year. We're already making plans for our virtual Washington seminar in 2021. We want to make sure that we comply with all the guidance, and the best way to ensure that all of our members are still able to actively participate during this era of COVID is to go ahead and start ramping up how we're going to do that in a way that capitalizes on the virtual tools that we've learned. So that's coming up. You'll hear more information about that soon. But the issues that we'll be addressing are the Access Technology Affordability Act. We all know that it's relatively expensive to live as a blind person, because even this Braille display here that I'm using, a sighted person wouldn't have to use. And the cost of this device is about $4,000. So we're not saying that we need to get anything for free. But if I'm going to have to pay this, I should be able to get a tax credit because it is an additional burden that I have to bear simply because of my disability that others do not. So we're just looking for fair and equitable treatment in society. So Sammy's Law, which we've been working on, is really around security as we take advantage of the ride-sharing options. And talk about that in more detail. It's not one of our major issues, but it is a success that we're having because it is passing through. I think it has passed the House and it's now on the Senate side. We are looking at fighting the fight that people, let's see, I think last year and maybe this year was H.R. 620, which was challenging our rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act. We're making sure that that doesn't happen. And it's important that we, as we fight and make these have the success, that we have to be vigilant to make sure that it doesn't go backwards, because they can just as easily take our rights away once, even though we've restored them, as they can just as easily just take them away. So we have the greater access and independence through non-visual access. That's our access technology. That one is just our GAIN Act. That's what we're trying to do with respect to all of our work to get home appliances and other devices, exercise equipment, et cetera, non-visually accessible. And we have been doing a good job of getting businesses to understand the business efficacy of it. But it would be very nice if we had a statute requirement that let me as a blind person and you as a blind person still be able to use our washers and dryers and ovens and stoves. And in this day that we all need to, including myself, lose a little weight, get on a treadmill or a bicycle or something without having to deal with these inaccessible interfaces that prohibit us from using these. Access Instructional Materials in Higher Education, our AIM High Act, that's one that we're still continuing to focus on. We as an organization recognize the importance of education. And the fundamental tool of being educated is being able to access the instructional materials that are being used to educate. Another synergistic piece of legislation, because as we fight for more accessible instructional materials, we recognize that the way that that's provided also helps sighted students as well. Gone are the days primarily of printed materials in the classroom environment because they're ever changing. So the digital format of the instructional materials, as long as it's accessible, allows us as blind people to compete in the academic environment just right alongside our sighted peers. The Transformation to Competitive Employment Act, which is dear to me back when I started working over on the advocacy and policy side, Dr. Maurer challenged me with the responsibility of going to Congress and getting them to repeal Section 14C, which is a law that allows employers to pay people with disabilities less than the federal minimum wage. And the reason I chuckled is because I thought, wow, this is great and a real simple task. This is so discriminatory on its face. This should not be something that would be difficult to do. Little did I know. But we've continued the good fight. We've made some significant progress in eliminating the utility of this provision, but our fight will not be won until the law itself is stricken from the books. Because as long as it's there, there are people that can legally abuse that. So we continue our fight and continue our good fight, our necessary fight. As John Lewis would say, we're getting into good trouble, necessary trouble, change the lives of all people with disabilities. So let me talk more about the stuff that I do, or the dynamic team that I supervise at the pleasure of the president does to deal with the education, employment, access technology, and research that the National Federation of Blind Journeying and Institute kind of incubates. And with the cooperation and support and participation of our affiliates, we disseminate these best practices and tools across the country. So if you want to look at some of the programs and services, please go to the nfb.org website and you can visit any of our little links that tells you about the programs I'm talking about now. We've been working a lot on STEM2U, or STEM programming overall. Our current STEM initiative, well, there are two. One is our STEM2U. Normally, we bring students to our National Center for Science Programming, and GM, General Motors, gave us a grant to do so. Then COVID came, and we had to find a way to provide this locally. So we actually put together STEM2U, where we're taking our STEM programming into the homes of our students. And what we do is we provide a kit of STEM activities, and then we set up a virtual platform through the Zoom to have our instructors, our blind instructors, actually talk these kids through basic engineering concepts using tools that are fun and engaging. That's going on right now. We just had one of our cohorts come through, and the next one will be taking place in November. That application, I believe, is still up, close to the maximum participation in that. I'm very sure to take a look. Another STEM event that we're working on is a grant through the National Science Foundation, our SABER grant, which allows us to sponsor our NFB EQ programs. And again, this would have been what we bring blind kids into. We had a partnership with Minnesota, the Science Museum of Minnesota. But again, because we had to do it virtually, we've been doing it very similarly. We've conducted our NFB EQ meetings with our students virtually, and that one's more teaching. It's teaching students more around something closer to architectural engineering, structural design, et cetera, which has been very dynamic. I've learned a lot just by participating peripherally in the development of that program. I want to thank Wells Fargo for continuing to support our Bell Academy. You guys had Carlton on earlier. Jackie Anderson, Natalie Shaheen, and Carlton Walker, and Carla McQuillan, and now Karen Anderson have all done a good job of progressively leading this initiative. We just recently had to, again, convert it to virtual. So we had our Bell in-home edition, where, again, we set up virtual tutoring for the students. We sent a big box of tools and toys to the kids, and our teachers virtually taught them how to engage with the various products. And then we also had a social component to that, which was really fun, seeing the kids dance. And, you know, and it's important for us to create those social activities for our young people. So some of the other programs, and I'll go through them fairly quickly, are our early childhood intervention programs. We want to make sure that parents recognize that they should be setting high expectations for their blind children from birth, and not just high expectations for them to be competitive with their blind peers, but for them to be competitive with their sighted peers. We want them to learn on age level and be right there where they would be regardless of whether they can see or not. So we foster that by giving the parents print Braille books through our Braille Reading Pals program. Carlton mentioned that a little bit earlier today. But basically, we have the sighted parents read from the print side of the page, and the kids can be exposed to the Braille on the other side of the page. And of course, they're not going to be reading The Tale of Two Cities right out of the womb, but it's important for them to be familiar with the tool of Braille so that it's not a foreign object in their environment as they grow older. Just as a point to make the point, I use the same tool as a blind parent to teach my sighted son how to read. Had books in his environment before he was even walking, and he was able to read it too. And again, not reading The Tale of Two Cities, but sounding out letters and words, and it allowed him to be successful academically as he progressed through school. Another early program is our Early Explorers program. We want to make sure that the parents recognize they should be their child's first travel instructor. Now, it's almost kind of natural, right, for a parent who doesn't know blindness the way that we know blindness, to want to keep their child in a protected environment or seemingly protective environment. And that turns into sit here, don't move, stay safe, put them in a place where they can engage with the environment. But we know But if a child doesn't engage in their environment tactfully, then they're not going to get to know their environment. And in order to travel, the cane is going to be an important tool for them to do so. So we give them little bitty canes, just the right size. That's a long white cane for the toddlers. And that way it's not a foreign object. Because I've heard stories of some blind kids not being given canes or being exposed to canes until they're graduating high school. And that's just like having someone go through high school without shoes. It makes no sense. So we want to make sure that the kids have the canes and they're familiar with it. They're not going to be leaving saying, "Mom, I'm going down to the store to get some Isomil. We're out." But they will know as they progress that this tool belongs in my environment and I should learn how to use it. The biggest problems that we have and the catalyst for why we even implemented our Braille academies is that far too few students are being taught Braille in the school system. That's done because there's a lack or a diminishing amount of teachers for blind students, which we're working on. You hear more about our Teachers of Tomorrow program, the recycle, not recycling. What's the word I'm looking for? We're bringing it back. You'll be hearing about that more in the coming months. But in order to do that, we had to make sure we got involved with the teachers to get them to understand that Braille is important. We all have heard the data of 70% unemployment of blind people. Of the 30% that are employed, statistics show that 90% of them know Braille. Yet and still, in the school systems, less than 10% of students are being taught Braille. So that means 90% of our kids are already being programmed for second-class dependency, the lack of real literacy. And we can't afford to do that. So we created our Braille Academy because, as President Rick Bono says, if they won't teach them, we will teach them ourselves. And no, we're not thinking that at 2 weeks of the Academy substitute for years of Braille instruction, but we're hoping that it will be the catalyst to inform parents of the efficacy of Braille, the utility of it, how easy it is, and hopefully assist them in going back to the school system and making it part of their IEP, individualized education program. And as part of that, we have to make sure that the team, the IEP team, makes the best decision for the student. In many instances where they've decided that Braille is not important, they've been misinformed. So we developed our National Reading Media Assessment. And what that does is that has the student participate in a variety of different activities to demonstrate to that team whether that student should be what we call a dual media learner. We're not trying to keep the students from using whatever functional vision they have. We recognize that fatigue, depending on what the eye disease is that's causing the deterioration, and we all know that as you progress through academics, that the print gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So we just want to make sure that in those instances where Braille is a better way for them to ingest the information, that they have the skill to be able to read it. And the National Reading Media Assessment helps professionals and educators determine whether that person should be benefiting from dual media instruction. I've already mentioned very briefly our Teacher of Tomorrow program. You'll be hearing again more of that as we go forward. But there will be a website up pretty soon. We'll be announcing that through normal channels. We wanted you to encourage all of the teachers that you know and the students that are pursuing degrees that will allow them to teach blind students to actually apply to be part of our first cohort. Our career mentoring program continues to work with transition age youth to make sure that our blind kids who are coming from that K-12 environment, moving into that vocational rehabilitation space, gets the support that they need. We've been doing a very active, well, proactive job of interacting with education and rehabilitation professionals to let them know that we're not in competition, that we're all on the same team. And our career mentoring program has allowed us to collaborate in partnership with Mississippi VR, Nebraska VR, Maryland VR, and we'll soon be onboarding vocational rehabilitation in the state of Illinois. And we're going to continue to grow this program because we recognize the benefit that it's already having. I encourage you to take a listen to my convention report, which was recorded after the convention proper, but it is on our YouTube space. And you can hear some of the remarkable things that we're doing through our career mentoring program. Our Center of Excellence in Non-Visual Access, those were all education and employment. But in access technology, we continue to be the industry leader because we're blind-led, and our team and our CINA staff are blind and blind at heart. But we're making sure that we do some really interesting things. We have our blind users innovating and leading design. Many people have taken advantage of the talent of our members to go out and use them to help them develop accessible products that help them make money. And in many instances, they've never compensated the blind person, and then we don't share in the success of that particular intervention or innovation. Our BUILD program, Blind Users Innovating Leading Design, really has those corporations and those researchers come to us. We define it in a way that pushes out information to our members who've agreed to be BUILD participants. We broker to make sure they are compensated. Some of them are simple projects, so it may just be like a $25 gift certificate. certificate. But some of them are a lot more robust. And we've had individuals that have been paid $100, you know, for an hour's worth of their time, depending on the specialization of knowledge that's required. So I encourage you that if you're interested in being on the cutting edge of any technology or devices, and you're willing to add your experience to that list, please go to the website and apply to be a BUILD participant. And I just want to let you know, you don't have to be a technological genius. The benefit that we've offered in this case is we have our entities recognize that we have novices, intermediate, and advanced technology users. And novices are important because they may not know the WCAG 2.1 AA standard, but they recognize what works, what doesn't work, what's difficult, and what's not difficult. And that information is just as valuable as the technical information. Our train-to-trainer conference went well. We were training people to best train blind people how to use access technology. Our our inclusive publishing conference, which just took place 1st of October, went well. Also, we're developing partnerships with those entities that create publications on various levels, and we want to make sure that that information is, the term now is born, accessible. And we also have a Smart Cities Summit that's coming up in the month of December. If you want any information on any of this related to our Center of Excellence in Non-Visual Access, please go to nfb.org/CENA, C-E-N-A. A lot of those projects and programs are being funded through a grant that we receive from the state of Maryland. It's a non-visual accessibility initiative grant, which is administered by the Maryland Department of Disability. One of the things that we're doing through that grant is developing the Accessibility Switchboard, which is an online portal that helps onboard people about accessibility in a way that's not overly complicated, as a component that speaks to consumers, those in the education environment, those in public spaces, and those that are corporate entities. So there's a host of other things that we're doing on the scene, but I encourage you to visit the website to get more of the information so that I can make sure I get us back on track for the convention. But I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that all of these programs and more would be possible because of the volunteer efforts of the NFB, but would be at a significantly smaller scale if it wasn't for the financial participation of our members and our families and our partners and our friends. So I encourage you to be very active in promoting our outreach efforts. We have a vehicle donation program where people can donate cars. And I say these because one of them I'll mention now may not be in every state, but we have a national network that we can tap into. So although I'm talking to people in Alaska, many of you have friends that are in Maryland. It may be you, maybe you may be the one that talks to them and finally convinces them that they need to just go ahead and donate that old jalopy so that blind kids can read. So our vehicle donation program allows us to do that. We have our Green Drop program, which allows people to donate clothing. We get funding from that. One of the most dynamic ways our members and real dedicated friends participate is through our pre-authorized contribution plan, our PAC plan, which allows individuals to donate $5 at a minimum every month automatically from whatever account or credit card they choose. And that's a great way of doing it because it comes out seamlessly and you're making a difference without even thinking about it. But I always encourage people that if you're on the PAC plan and you don't recognize that the donation is going out every month, then it's time for you to up your donation because you should feel it a little bit so that you know that you should feel good about what you're doing. You can get more information about that at nfb.org/PAC. Plan giving is the, I think, culmination of all the work that I plan on doing. Once I'm no longer able to physically provide support for the projects and programs of the Federation, I have an instrument in my will that allows a portion of my life insurance to be donated to the Federation so that I can continue to give even longer after I pass. So our plan giving programs are out there. Be a member of our Dream Makers Circle. Get a cute little plaque for that commitment, and I just encourage you all to consider that. So in order to stay informed about what we're doing, I would just want to give you these list of resources, and then I'll turn it back over to Bond. So I want you to go to the NFB website. That's a primary source of a lot of resources. Please subscribe and pull down, or you can just visit online our monthly publication, which is the Braille Monitor. It's packed full of information about what we're doing. Carlton mentioned, and I agree, the Future Reflections magazine, which is a quarterly publication, which is primarily meant for parents and teachers, also offers information for everybody. If you want to feel motivated about what we're doing, some of the stories in the Future Reflections publication are so heartwarming, and it also gives me energy to continue to go out and kind of evangelize the work that we're doing here at the Federation. We have our Jacobus Timbrook Library at our National Center, which is the history of the blindness movement. It's everything non-medical about blindness. So if you are doing research, want to do a paper, or just putting together some statistics to share with other people, contact our librarian there and she can help you with any of that information. We have our Journal of Blindness Innovation and Research. That's our peer review publication. We want to make sure that the research that we do as an organization gets the degree of respect that it should within those professional groups. So our JBIR is our peer-reviewed publication that we publish research related to blindness that comes from an authentic lived experience of blind people. The Imagineering Our Future is a digital newsletter that goes out monthly from the national president. So if you would like to subscribe to that, that's very easy to do. Our Nation's Blind podcast, which I co-host with Melissa Cabono, one of the things I did not know I would enjoy as much as I do, but it's a fun way to engage our members, and we're trying desperately to make sure that we come up with content that is interesting and finding dynamic ways to include our members in that as well. The Voice of the Nation's Blind blog posts a variety of different blog posts with a variety of different topics. And we encourage our members to even submit things as guest blogs. I guess it wouldn't be a guest because you're a member, but we encourage our members to also submit things to be published on our blog posts as well. You can go to our NFP.org and subscribe to receive directly all of the press releases that we disseminate. So you hear about all of the victories that we announce through our press release mechanism. And then, of course, we have a variety of different social media outlets. Because we are a contemporary organization, we have a presence on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @NFB_voice. We have a presence on Facebook. If you just look for National Federation of the Blind on Facebook, you can follow us. And I think that's it. But I would be remiss if I didn't come back to how I opened. Although the National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future, and every day we raise expectations for blind people because we realize it's those low expectations that create obstacles between blind people and our dreams, we recognize that you can live the life you want, and blindness is not what holds you back. It is truly indeed our Federation family that makes all of that true. And if you care to join us, then you can experience the hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind, because every day your expectations will be raised. The contribution that you make will help you and others. We'll all be here to celebrate the accomplishments together as a family. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you're celebrating all of the good work that we're all doing. And I'm so pleased to be with my NFB of Alaska family. Thank you.